Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A new Statue of Liberty postage stamp features the wrong Statue of Liberty. A Beaverton woman is arrested for war crimes in Bosnia, and President Obama addresses that pesky birth certificate issue.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, April 15th, 2011. Neighbors of a Beaverton woman reacted in shock to the news that Rasima Handanovic, Handanovic, is in federal custody facing charges for alleged war crimes in Bosnia.
You don't typically see that in your Beaverton resident.
Not so much, no. War crimes in Hillsboro, maybe. Handanovic had been a U.S. citizen since 2002. The Bosnian government wants the U.S. to extradite her to face war crime charges in their country. Bosnian officials believe the 39-year-old took part in the murders of 16 unarmed civilians and soldiers while serving in that country's army in 1993. At Handovic's apartment complex in Beaverton, neighbors were stunned by the news. Andrew Vertries said, "It's scary because we have kids that run around in the courtyard right here. It's really creepy to think that someone that close to our living, it's really scary."
To be fair, you really don't want your kids hanging around with war criminals. I think we can all agree on that. Really,
yeah.
I mean, black, white, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, you probably don't want your kids hanging around with somebody who's committed war atrocities.
Probably not. But at the same time, though, I doubt that, you know, it's unlikely that she's going to just sort of snap and then just goes, "Those children, it reminds me of Bosnia," and just, you know.
Well, to be fair, I think it's probably pretty unlikely that she was going to be a war criminal in the first place. So I think the law of averages isn't on anybody's side
here. Yeah. Bosnian officials also called for the arrest of a man living in Everett, Washington, under similar charges. Both suspects would have been 18 years old when they committed alleged war crimes against Croatian villagers.
They don't need the regular amount of dite here. We need extra dite. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, entertainment news, also science on the march, also chicanery, also tomfoolery. You can get this program later on today from iTunes if that's your pleasure, that's your fancy. You can also get it via direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. This is all true. You can also get it on your mobile device if you like. It is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. .fm, and then the Rick Emerson radio program graces your ear holes next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Just as the post office was hoping to promote going green, it finds itself red in the face.
Ha!
Thank you. It turns out that a first-class stamp featuring the Statue of Liberty is based on a photo of a Las Vegas replica of the Statue of Liberty.
If it's based on a replica, what's the problem?
Well,
The photo itself, you know, here's the thing. The stamp itself is a replica. I don't want to shatter anybody's illusions. It's not the real Statue of Liberty. It's a piece of paper that you stick on an envelope.
Yeah, I guess the stamp has a close-up photograph of her head and crown. And stamp collectors, some people noted that the stamp shows a rectangular patch on the crown of the statue. That patch doesn't appear on the actual statue. That is apparently some kind of a patch job that was done on the one in Las Vegas.
Again, not the real Statue of Liberty regardless.
Lynn's Stamp News said that the eyes, eyelids, and eyebrows on the replica appeared more sharply defined than on the original statue, and the hair was different.
Meanwhile, the newsletter put up by the husband of Lynn from Lynn Stamp News just says, kill me, kill me. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
President Obama publicly addressed...
President who?
Obama.
I swear to God, you said Jim Varney.
No, President Barack Sasquatch Obama.
Damn it. Okay.
Jim Varney's dead. He's not addressing anyone. President Obama publicly addressed the birther issue for the first time on Thursday, saying it's not a good strategy for Republicans because it will backfire in the general election. Obama's comments came during an interview with ABC News' George Stephanopoulos when he was asked about potential GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump's birther-fueled rise in the polls. He and others continue to raise questions, of course, about whether the president was born in the United States.
And I've got lots of Obama
cuts. Obama 7.
Obama 7.
We're not really worrying about conspiracy theories or birth certificates. And so
I'm actually reversing them here. Hold on. This is actually Obama 7.
We're not really.
Ah, no. There we go. It was right all along.
We're not really worrying about conspiracy theories or birth certificates. And so I think it presents a problem for them.
Obama said that, I think that over the last 2.5 years, there's been an effort to go at me in a way that's politically expedient in the short term for Republicans, but creates, I think, a problem for them when they want to actually run in the general election, where most people feel pretty confident the president was born where he says he was, in Hawaii. He also said he doesn't have horns, speaking of himself.
Did he really say that?
He did.
Oh, I see.
He said, people feel pretty confident the president was born where he says he was in Hawaii. He doesn't have horns.
Well, to be honest, we can tell he doesn't have horns. I don't really know that that was ever in dispute. I mean,
wears hats.
He's got a close-cropped haircut. I would think if he had horns, they would, unless they're horns on his on his backside somehow, in which case they're not really horns. They're just those things Lady Gaga has.
Yeah, he said that he believes what the American public is thinking is, we want to know his plan on gas prices, but we're not really worrying about conspiracy theories or birth certificates, so I think it presents a problem for them. The president's comment came as cable networks buzzed with talk of the birther issue since Donald Trump hauled it back into the mainstream. Everyone has heard the stories of Great Depression suicides by despondent investors, but a link between government ups and downs and suicide rates has remained tenuous until now. A government analysis released Thursday shows that suicide rates track the business cycle among working-age adults. Suicide by children and the elderly, by contrast, bears no correlation to the economy. The study does not prove that economic woes induce suicide attempts, but they may contribute. Researchers at the American Psychiatric Institute said it may be that when people who are more vulnerable to suicide to begin with lose a job or get a pay cut, it adds one more stressor. Researchers found the suicide spiked at the beginning of the Great Depression, during the 1970s oil crisis, and with the recession in the early 1980s.
Just mean there's some sort of a Vegas line on suicide. We can sort of track it based on the Nasdaq or something.
Yeah, it's one of those useful studies that we get all the time that say something like, it turns out that people who are miserable are even more miserable when they don't have money.
This will tell you when to keep an eye toward the sky, because it might be, raining men.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
The Portland Timbers got their first Major League Soccer victory in their rain-drenched home opener against the Chicago Fire last night. Jorge Perlaza scored 2 goals, while Rodney Wallace added another for the Timbers in the 4-2 win at Geldwin Field. Portland, which is now 1-2-1, started the season on the road, while $31 million in improvements were completed to make their downtown stadium more soccer-friendly. Timbers coach John Spencer said about the atmosphere at the stadium, "You haven't seen that in American soccer, to be honest. It was tremendous." As the Timbers Army was given the honor of singing the national anthem, when I saw Sean Levy at the
Buck
Simon the other day, he was so excited about it. Yes, that the Timbers Army was going to actually go out on the field, sing the national anthem for the opening game, that ESPN was going to be there, and they had promised they would stay on them while they sang the national anthem. So I guess if you watched the game last night, you saw the you probably saw Sean Levy of the Oregonian out there singing the national anthem.
Oh, because is he like an honorary? Is he like the 12th man or something?
He's a hardcore Timbers Army guy.
Well, right, but it wasn't. But when you say the Timbers, was it the Timbers Army or the team?
The Timbers Army got to sing the national anthem.
I thought it was
the
team who was actually going to be singing. All right.
No, the crazy fans from the Timbers Army section of the stadium got to sing the national anthem.
Fantastic. By the way, this is probably a good time to note. So we had a little bit of a misstatement the other day. Anna Griffin was on with us, and so we were talking about the Timbers ad campaign, which is up all around town with the billboards and the guys and the hey and the whatnot and the look at me holding my axe, which we sort of, I think, justifiably thought was from Wieden Kennedy, and it apparently is not, so we misspoke there.
Oh.
I guess because we're just sort of trained in Portland to assume that everything that's brilliant comes from Wieden Kennedy, understandably so. So we heard a correction from our good friend Siegfried, who said that the Timbers ad campaign that you've seen is actually made by a company called Nemo, which is a company that I'm a little bit familiar with. But Nemo was actually started by some folks who are sort of expats from Wieden Kennedy. So Wieden Kennedy may be doing some sort of advertising for the Timbers, but apparently that ad campaign is not itself from Wieden Kennedy. That is from a company called Nemo, which is also based here in Portland. So there you go. The more you know. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, April 15th, 2011. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got your Hick Watch coming up. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today talking about the life, work, legacy, and art of one Mr. William Murray. So Bill Murray today, the focus of Humor Me, Comedy 101, with Big Jim Willig. And we may or may not hack together a top five of some kind. It's part of the enduring mystery of the Rick Emerson Show, whether or not that'll actually happen. Here is Don Taylor.
You know, if we start actually issuing corrections for everything that we say that is wrong, we'll never actually get to anything else.
That's my cunning plan.
Mm. So Don Durfler, a Portland man, said his own wife didn't believe him when he told her that the mail carrier was defecating in a neighbor's yard.
Can I just tell you this? By the way, I got 752,000 people who sent me this story this morning. All of them, it's like there was some memo that went out. All of them with the same headline. Is this your mail carrier, Rick Emerson?
Do you have a problem with the mail carriers and poop in your neighborhood?
You don't know, do you? You weren't here. You were not around.
Well, I believe there was some story about a hobo.
You were not around for this iteration of the Rick Emerson Show when we had this discussion. So there was this incident, I don't know, maybe two and a half years ago, where there was, in fact, a person or persons unknown who did a little bit of business in my driveway. I'm assuming, well, let me put it this way. I assumed at the time it was a homeless person, because who else would just be, you know, defecating in your driveway? It's inconceivable that it would not be a homeless guy or just a meth-addled bum. And so that is the reason why. It wasn't just because I live in Southeast, but that was the reason why I woke up this morning in my inbox. It was just like the River Ganges. This story just flowed in from everyone, all of them.
In many, many ways.
Asking the same, you know, variation of the same, like, I think we found your mail carrier. Wah, 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 wah. So.
Well, this fellow Don Durfler saw it from his living room window while he was babysitting his son Wednesday afternoon. He said the mail carrier started pulling his pants down and started defecating, and at that point I grabbed my camera and started taking pictures. Officials with the U.S. Postal Service say they are disheartened and disappointed. Because I guess, you know,
It's funny they don't add surprise to that list.
That's somehow not in the manual. Ron Anderson with the U.S. Postal Service says, "We're taking this very seriously, and I really want to apologize to our customers and to the public. I've worked for the Postal Service for many years and have never heard of an incident like this, and I hope I never do it again."
The funny thing is, there was a bathroom just like two blocks away.
Yeah, that's what they said. There's a public park just like a couple of blocks away and a restroom there.
I guess really the whole world is your public park, I mean, depending on how you look at these things.
Really? So, one of the neighbors said, "Nature calls at inopportune times, but geez, Go back to your rig and find a gas station, for crying out loud.
So. By the way, there is already a Twitter handle of @poopingmailman, just in case anybody wanted to go register that. That's already taken.
How could, yeah, well.
@poopingmailman, he lives under the bed next to @scaryclown.
No, there are no pooping mailmen under
Here's
my bed.
The thing about the pooping mailman story, and Cheryl was pointing this out to me this morning, we were talking about this, that one of the news networks actually showed his face, and the other network blurred his face out. So, like, K2 showed his face, and, like, KGW or somebody, like, they sort of did the wall. A, why would you be blurring out his face? He's pooping in people's driveways. The people have a right to know about that. Secondly, if K2 is, or whoever is already showing his face, it seems like that's where the horse is already... The barn is empty at that point. I mean, why would you bother? That just seems ridiculous. So, anyway. So, if you want to see a picture of the pooping mailman, as I know you do, you can go online. I believe it was K2 that was showing a photograph. K2, by the way, which I don't know if they do this for all the different quadrants or sections or whatever town. K2 apparently, they have a section that is just, they have like a Southeast Bureau. Because if you read this line, this story online this morning, you probably saw it in the same place I did, which was at southeast.k2.com.
Yeah.
Which is weird. And so I'm assuming that they have one of those for every section of town, but I've never seen a story at like northwest.k2.com. So I'm suspecting a wholly disproportionate number of their crimes and news stories come from my hood, as the young people say.
I'm operating under the assumption that these are none of our mailman listeners, because we have a number of mailman listeners.
Well, they do poop.
Yeah, but I
our listeners poop.
Hopefully they do not poop in people's yards.
Well, you say hopefully. Hey, this is a good question. Did the guy in that story, did he use the phrase, "I was babysitting my son"?
Yeah, as if, you know.
I think that's just called parenting.
Right.
That's what somebody else says here. Yes, yes, that is. Yeah. Babysitting his son is just called being a parent.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
What? You mean I got to stay with the kid?
That's lady work.
The owners of the Fukushima nuclear plant must pay $12,000 to each household displaced or forced inside by a nuclear accident.
That seems
according
fair.
According to Japan's government. That sum is an advance on the compensation owed to residents and businesses stricken by the accident. The Tokyo Electric Power Company said it would begin distributing the money as soon as possible, aiming to put checks in residents' hands by Japan's celebratory Golden Week, beginning April 29th. Little celebration of a national holiday, okay, by getting a check for being forced from your home by radiation. Approximately 78,000 people within the 12.5-mile radius of the plant were ordered to evacuate after the March 11th disaster. People living in a 6-mile band beyond that were told to stay indoors as radiation seeped from the stricken reactors. The Japanese government estimates the accident affected a total of 146,000 people.
Is the idea that if you're indoors that the radiation can't find you?
Right.
Is this a sort of like it's a bug bladder beast of trowel that it's like if you
turn off the lights, pull the curtains,
just hiding in a cloak closet somewhere, going maybe it won't see us. By the way, for those of you who are curious about it, yes, seconds ago on Twitter, Pooping Mailman says, Rick Emerson, Don Taylor, thanks for the shout out. No, thank you, sir. Thank you.
So he's a pooping mailman.
He looks really happy.
He's a listener.
Yeah, his well, of course he is. The pooping mailman's a listener. As I think the GM worker would say, duh.
Get the pooping mailman his own podcast.
All right. Get right on that.
President Obama gave a campaign speech to the party faithful last night in Chicago. He told the gathering the American dream is still alive.
What cut is this?
Obama won.
We've got to reclaim the American dream for all Americans. That's the change we still believe in. That's what I think about every single day. That's our North Star. That's our destination. And we're not there yet.
I love the way he said, that's what I think about.
I don't think
he sounded very dreamy there.
I don't think it can be both the North Star and our destination. I think it's one or the other. You're not going to the North Star. That's...
No, you're guided by the North Star. It's
By the way, it's unfortunate that he's already back at that, you know, that's the thing we still dream about. It's like he's already back at, like, remember that great catchphrase?
Yeah.
Who likes tie a ribbon around the old oak tree? Come on.
I think if you've actually been in office for 4 years and you're telling people that we need change,
yeah,
then something you're doing something very wrong.
Just you know, it's like he's just one step away from just, you know, going, hey, Norm, oh ho, hey, give me $5.
He rallied the troops to move his agenda forward.
We didn't come here tonight just to pat ourselves on the back. We came here tonight because we know that for all the progress we've made, we've still got business to do.
He told the gathering he's encountered many unexpected twists and turns on the job, and he joked about one in particular.
Along the way, we had to deal with pirates.
they were killing people.
Who thought we were going to have to deal with pirates?
Okay, see, that's pretty great.
That wasn't in my campaign platform.
See, now that's awesome. Now, see, if he would do more of that, he would have like a 75% approval rating. Here's the thing. Is it like, you know, and I know that other people will talk about, you know, like actual problems and change and fixing things and, you know, like what actually needs to be done, you know, to get everybody a job and whatever. I mean, that's for other people to worry about. I'm just talking about what makes the average American happy. He should have just taken up, his people should have taken up billboards just across the country where it was just him standing on the neck of a pirate who was on the ground, breaking the pirate's cutlass over his knee and just saying, "Obama, stronger than pirates." And then just him, like, pointing his finger at the camera, just sort of like, "Yeah, Brooklyn!" You know, and just, I'm telling you, right there, he would have locked up a second term right there. People never ask me about these things.
No. An argument over the respective merits of U.S. boxing legend Mike Tyson and Ukraine's Klitschko brothers ended with a Russian college teacher stabbing his friend to death. Nikolai Makiev, a teacher in the Siberian city of Tumen, was having drinks with two other men in his apartment when the argument broke out.
He was having drinks with two men in Tumen?
Yes, okay. Two men in Tumen. Makiev said that Tyson would come out as a winner if he had to fight the Klitschko brothers, but his guests accused him of a lack of patriotism. The host did not like that, and he fatally stabbed the victim several times in the back. The other guest, Makiev's friend, managed to flee to his own apartment, although he also had stab wounds, and his wife called the police. And then it ends with this, just because, just sort of as a coda for the story. Alcohol abuse kills around 500,000 Russians annually and greatly impacts on male life expectancy, which is now 63, lower than in developing countries such as Bangladesh and Honduras.
It sounds like that sort of alcohol doesn't kill Russians, Russians kill Russians.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah, they weren't killed by, I mean,
the bottle just sat there.
Yeah.
Seems like it was the guy with the knife that did the stabbing. I mean, I'm just, you know. Also, it seems like it's unfair to be putting Mike Tyson up against two guys. And what kind of national pride do you have if it takes two of your citizens to beat up Mike Tyson? I mean, what kind of patriotism is that? Now, I think the Tyson guy had it all. He was in the right there.
Yeah, but he paid for it.
Well, you know, sometimes one has to, you know, standing by one's choices and defending one's honor and loyalty. It's not an easy thing, Don. If it was easy, anybody would do it.
A man who walked in. I'm sorry. Start again. A man who broke into a Washington business Thursday night was shot dead by a store employee, and a second intruder was held at gunpoint until police could arrive. Two men who broke into Sharp's outdoor power equipment in Georgetown just after 11:30 p.m. were confronted by a store employee, said Jeff Kappel with the Seattle Police. The employee shot one of the intruders and held the other at gunpoint until police arrived. The wounded intruder was pronounced dead at the scene, and officers took the surviving intruder into custody. Police are interviewing the employee to sort out what happened. The intruders have not yet been identified. I think it's pretty obvious what happened. Two guys tried to steal stuff from the power equipment store, and a guy shot them.
And this is where?
Seattle.
All right. And it was like a hardware sort of thing or an outfit?
Power equipment. So I guess it's like probably power sprayers.
Of all the places you want to rob, I mean, it seems like that would be... It's like robbing somebody at a gun store, Andy and Bax or something. It seems like that's just going to end badly for you.
Yeah, you want to rob a nail salon, someplace that isn't quite so manly.
Not that you should be robbing places, but I mean, if you're going to do it.
No, robbing is bad.
Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today we welcome new subscribers Tracy in Portland and also Lee in Forest Grove. So then I think yesterday we had somebody who was listening to us in like, I don't know, some damn place in California. So, hello, whoever you are.
California person.
California man. That was yesterday, but his name escapes me at the moment. Rick Emerson regrets the error. My brain is porous. But today, listeners, Tracy and Lee join the Rick Emerson. I'm not complaining or carping or kvetching. I guess I am a little bit. I'm just saying... Not like we invented it or anything, but we've been doing that Emerson Army thing forever. Now I feel like it's been usurped by the ball kickers.
Well, the Emerson Army got usurped. Then you used to call them the Glorious Bastards, and then the movie Inglorious Bastards came out.
Seriously,
and then it would seem like you were.
You know what it is? It's like
stealing that.
It's like I incubate great ideas just long enough that somebody else can come along and just use them. So, well, in any event, so listeners, Tracy in Portland and Lee in Forest Grove. Joining us today. Don't forget, if you want to experience the Rick Emerson Show for yourself, and we know you do, you can hear that at rickemersonshow.com for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And, of course, your first week is free. So if you get to the end of the first week and you say, well, My brain is saturated with all the entertainment. I can't bear to laugh anymore. I can't stand anymore at entertainment or amusement or information, or I feel like my oblongata is just going to implode under the weight of all of this new data. Then you can just get out without having to pay anything. So your first week is free, but after that, just 32 cents a day, so you can subscribe and begin listening, like now at Rick Emerson Show. .com. That is rickemersonshow.com. So welcome to listeners Tracy and Lee today. Here is Don Taylor.
We could just start calling the listeners something that makes like no actual sense, because then no one will ever steal it. Like the Rick Emerson Mother Lizard Chair Cats.
Glubbity Glarb Nubs.
Yeah. Protesters from around the world gathered yesterday in London, where BP held its annual shareholders meeting. Antonia Juhas is an oil industry watchdog from the U.S.
And incidentally, there's only one cut here.
Okay.
He's an industry watchdog?
Antonia Juhas.
We've come from the United States for BP's annual shareholder meeting.
Doesn't sound like an Antonio, but what
Antonia.
Are you going to do?
Antonia.
Oh, Antonia, sorry.
We've come from the United States for BP's annual shareholder meeting to make sure that BP does not forget about the Gulf Coast.
Okay, well.
Doesn't sound very angry.
Have fun with that. Yeah.
Let's do our science news, if you will hand me the science from behind you there.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by SquiresElectric.com. You can go to SquiresElectric.com to find out more, or you can call them if you like, if that's your pleasure, if that's your thing. It is 503-252-1609. By the way, can I just tell you this? One of the many, many services provided by Squires Electric. So Anna Griffin was here on Wednesday.
That's right.
She's here on the Rick Emerson Show on Wednesdays, alternate Wednesdays. She gets done. We say, hey, great show. High fives all around. And then, Don and I are sort of wrapping up, tidying things up. Don's going over to do Hamfisted Radio. Anna Griffin leaves, reappears in the studio like 90 seconds later. And she said, hey, I just locked my keys in my car. And we said, hey, what about those fine strapping young men at Squires Electric? I bet they've got a thing that'll open your car. And so I walked out about 2 minutes later, and I walked her down to Squires Electric, which is right near us. And sure enough, one of the guys from Squires Electric walked down out, and I saw him doing that thing of, I don't even think it was like a Slim Jim or whatever that thing is called. I think it was just like some crap he found laying around.
Yeah.
It was like a brick and some aluminum foil and like a burrito.
A piece of gum.
Yeah, and he just went, hold on. And door popped open, and bam, done. Gold. So there you go. So another satisfied customer, even though it wasn't really a customer. So they're just good people,
they're
is my
handy.
Point. That's what they know what they're doing. You contact Squires Electric if you need your electricity, if you need your electrical wiring or the electrical fixtures or the outlets or anything in your home or business. If you need them upgraded or repaired or installed, if you need them inspected, if you got an inspection coming up and you want to do a little pre-inspection on your own to make sure that you're going to pass it, because Squires Electric comes on out, they find some sort of a problem, you get it taken care of. Then when the inspector from the city comes through, you have to renew some sort of a business license. They have to come through and they have to do a safety check. You're going to pass with flying colors. You just don't really leave it up to chance. So you want to make sure that stuff is all working properly. Or if you're going to be expanding your home, you're going to be remodeling, sometimes one has a little bit of knowledge, but not all of it. So maybe you can do the rebar, you can do the sheetrock, you can do the plumbing, you can do the do the roofing, you do the flooring, maybe do everything but the electrical system. You want to get the electrical system done right, you want to get it done right the first time, you want to get it done cheaply and efficiently, and you want to make sure that it's going to operate the way that it should. So you contact Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. They are the proud sponsors of this Science on the March.
When the Olympics are over, the stadium and the sport facilities remain behind. Some get repurposed, but others become painful reminders of enormous investments. To level the playing field, one architect is proposing a design for floating, reusable Olympic facilities. Nearly 90% of the world's nations can't afford to build for major sporting events, said Michael Burt, professor emeritus of architecture at Technicon Israel Institute of Technology. He says not just the Olympics. Inspired by artificial structures for marine environments, Burt developed a conceptual array of Olympic facilities, including a stadium that could be transported along waterways and moored in major port cities. The design calls for a stadium that can hold 150,000 spectators, as well as modules that would contain auxiliary sporting facilities, housing accommodations, administrative, and offices. The separate modules would be towed in as needed. Once in place, the facilities would form a sturdy archipelago accessible by footbridges. Spectators and athletes could enter from a fixed pier, a pontoon bridge, a ferry, or some combination. In late March, Burt presented the concept at the Technology, Knowledge, and Society Conference in Spain. Questions about who would be responsible for investing in and then maintaining and operating it remain. But despite presenting the plan at conferences over many years, Bird's vision still hasn't been put into motion.
By the way, well done on Archipelago.
Oh, thank you.
Excellent.
So this is just to be like a big floating. This is going to be like a floating version over that that jazz they do at every high school now, where it's just like a bunch of trailers they bring in.
You yeah, know? Except it would be like sort of on barges, and they'd be floating up. But any city that has a waterway could host an Olympics, and they wouldn't have to build everything, and then also wouldn't have all of these buildings to maintain and do something with after it was over.
It's funny, my the wallpaper on my laptop, if you look at my desktop here, is actually some of that urbex photography, the urban exploration, but it's one of the swimming pools in the Olympic Village. How do I put this? It is the swimming pool for the Russian section of the Olympic Village in Berlin. So for the Berlin Olympics, you know, the different countries all have their own little Olympic Village, and there's an Olympic Village that was used by the Soviet Union for their swimming team, and it's just completely, I mean, it's just completely falling apart. I mean, it's just totally like nature has taken that back to a large degree, and it's sort of beautiful, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of a waste. And so,
yeah.
Who doesn't love a floating city? Maybe they could have a bouncy house just for fun.
Well, the whole thing actually is kind of, in its own way, sort of a bouncy house. The buildings would have an infinite polyhedral lattice form. And then the lattices are multi-layered, low-density bar and joint trusses made from steel. But yeah, it's the 650-square-foot span could be made from less than 90 pounds of steel, and then covered with a lightweight material.
Doesn't it seem like this is just sort of a bad Pauly Shore movie just waiting to happen, though, where there's, you know, like somebody accidentally wears their cleats into the, you know, and then and then, yeah, and just sort of through the air.
Oh, no.
That'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic.
Staph bacteria contaminated nearly half of U.S. meat samples in a recent analysis, with 96% of bacteria showing resistance to at least one type of drug. The most common bacteria found was Staphylococcus aureus, which showed genetic differences and varying levels of drug resistance based on the type of meat it was found in. During the project, scientists studied 136 samples of beef, pork, turkey, and chicken from 26 grocery stores in 5 U.S. states. After examining the samples in the lab, researchers found Staph bacteria contaminated more than 3/4 of the turkey meat. Pork and chicken were close behind, each having approximately 40% of their samples contaminated with Staph, and beef with 37%. Strains with resistance to more than 3 antimicrobials were most common in turkey, followed by pork, beef, and chicken. In a few samples, the team found methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, also known as MRSA, which is that flesh-eating bacteria they call it. It's antibiotic-resistant, and that can actually lead to severe infections, even on the surface of the skin. But of course, keep in mind that the most harmful bacteria can be killed by cooking meats at appropriate temperatures.
Yeah, just don't eat stuff that's raw, like right out of the bag. And it seems like you're going to, you know, don't just go take a bite out of the cow.
But you should also keep in mind, this is something to think about. Because when I was a chef, I had to go through all the food handling classes and all that sort of thing. If you can be exposed to the drug resistant Staph and all kinds of other things, like raw chicken, for example, is just horrible. It's just full of just nasty things that can harm you. And, you know, cooking and eating it is all well, you know, cooking it will get rid of it. But just always remember that you're getting the stuff all over your hands while you're handling it. You're getting it on the counter. You're getting it on, you know, the cutting boards. It's like, it's not enough to just go, well, I'm cooking it before I eat it, so I'm okay. Just, you know, just have some common sense and realize that it gets everywhere else before you cook it, too.
Idiot.
Fools.
Stupid.
Your Staph infection. You deserve it if you don't wash your hands.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us.
That's my science.
Still, is that the end of science?
No, I have one more.
Still to come this hour, your entertainment news. Here is Don Taylor.
I just think every science segment should end with one of us going, stupid. Man. Workers at Japan's troubled nuclear plant should store blood cells now in case they need them later as treatment for radiation exposure.
In case they need them. In the unlikely event that you develop some sort of health issue.
This is being suggested by some Japanese experts. Plant workers are struggling to control radiation leakage from the Fukushima Daiichi complex. Radiation levels are dangerously high in some areas of the plant, and the experts note that the work there will take years posing a risk of accidental exposure. High doses of radiation can destroy the blood-making cells of the bone marrow, a potentially fatal outcome that can be treated with transplants of blood stem cells. Such transplants are standard therapy now for blood diseases like leukemia. Getting these cells from a donor takes time, and potential incompatibility between the donated cells and the recipient can lead to severe complications. So experts are suggesting that workers at the Daiichi plant, the Fukushima, the atomic samurai,
yes,
if you will, actually have their own blood stem cells banked now.
Well, why? We should all be doing that, I would think. Why can't I just start to? Well, it's like you can save your own blood in a blood bank.
No.
Seems like maybe I could be putting my own stem cells aside right now.
Yeah, you could.
Just, you know, cure whatever it is that I will undoubtedly develop in the future is karma.
That's true.
Excellent.
So, yeah, so they get they would involve getting injections for several days to get stem cells from the marrow to enter the bloodstream. And then blood would be drawn from one arm, processed to extract the stem cells, and then returned to the other arm.
Fantastic.
So, there you go. And that's the news.
There you go. There's your science on the march for Friday, April 15th. 2011. Thank you for joining us. Still to come this hour, we got your entertainment news, and then next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. It is rickemersonshow.com. Yes, the alternate name, Atomikazes. Yes. Coming up next hour, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Today, talking about the life and work of Mr. Bill Murray. We'll also have a Hick Watch and so forth. Here is Dante.
Malala Man is facing drug and child neglect charges after investigators said he was dealing heroin. Ulysses Guyron Jr. was arrested Wednesday on... By the way, and Ulysses, who... Mr. and Mrs. Guyron, parents of Ulysses Guyron Jr., or actually parents of Ulysses Guyron Sr. Ulysses is not spelled U-L-I-S-E-S.
Well, not in your world.
He was arrested Wednesday on charges of possession of a controlled substance, distribution of a controlled substance, and child neglect.
How do they spell it?
U-L-I-S-E-S.
That's
Ulysses.
Yeah, I was going to say there's nothing correct about that except
no.
for the U.
Yeah.
Okay.
Deputies say Guyron is purported to have a large customer base in the Malala area, including high school-aged boys and girls. Last week, agents with the Clackamas County Interagency Task Force conducted surveillance on Guyron and saw him make several drug deals at his house and across town. Wednesday, investigators served a search warrant on his home on Metzler Avenue in Malala. The 21-year-old lived in an outbuilding on his parents' property with his girlfriend and their 2-year-old child. Inside the structure, deputies say they found heroin, $700 in cash, and packing materials. One of his neighbors said, unsurprisingly, "We were just totally floored by it. He's a real clean-cut kid, and the whole bit, and they've always been real nice."
And the whole bit.
And the whole bit. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, he's arrested for being a ne'er-do-well.
I bid.
Yes. As reported earlier this week, a second air traffic controller apparently fell asleep on the job. A medical flight was trying to land early Wednesday at the Reno Tahoe Airport, but the pilot apparently couldn't get through to the control tower.
Vector 10 November, and they're not answering the phone line either. We're going to try and get another number. See if someone can go up there and check the tower.
That's...
We're going to need to land.
That's... Meanwhile, the guy's like, "Yeah, that's all well and good, but I got a plane that I'm flying here,
yeah,
and so I got to put it down at some point. If you don't mind, you can fix the other thing later."
The pilot then called the FAA in Northern California.
We've got a pretty sick case that we may just have to land when we have clearance on.
Again, we're in the air in a huge, huge piece of metal that weighs 30,000 pounds.
Very much like to land. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood said it's the sixth such incident this year and is inexcusable.
"This is ridiculous. It's outrageous. It's the kind of behavior that we will not stand for at the Department of Transportation. The controller has been suspended. We're conducting an investigation."
It's crazy because, first of all, why would you buy parts from in Japan when you're supposed to keep it in the United States anyway? So common sense. I hope they're up there saying, "A duh."
Excellent. Duh. Fantastic.
15-year-old Wajir Johnson of Frederick, Maryland, lost his hand in a home construction accident on Christmas Eve, but yesterday he received a prosthetic hand just in time for prom.
So he was, when you say a home construction accident.
Well, here's what happened.
Table saw?
Miter saw.
Ah, excellent.
He was helping his family cut baseboards with a miter saw. He had done most of the work on his own as a surprise for his family.
Yeah, he... Might have gone too close with the blade.
As they came back home from dinner, he went to finish the last piece, and as he put it, I actually tried to get audio of him saying this, and the audio wasn't very clear. It caught my coat, and I tugged the saw, and it came down on top of me, and then I saw my hand fly.
Yeah, that's no good. You don't want that.
Yeah. He cut a major artery. Even though he was in extreme pain, his mother said he was polite to the paramedics.
She said
her son even apologized for causing them to miss Christmas Eve with their families.
Sorry about the staining and everything.
Sorry about the horrible Christmas and the gushing river of blood from my wrist.
Yeah.
So his recovery was somewhat painful. He's been learning since early January how to function without his left hand. His mother said, he wouldn't let us do anything. He said, let me try it first. If I can't get it, then I'll ask for help.
Fantastic. See,
good for him.
You know, he's a can-do young man.
He is.
He really is. See, that's the kind of American spunk that we need.
So he wanted a prosthetic hand before going to prom at his school. He reached out for help. Family and friends raised $10,000. A certified prosthetic orthotist at Ability Prosthetics and Orthotics in Frederick worked with Touch Bionics in Ohio to get his prosthesis made in time. And if you get a chance, there is video of him online.
Does he have like one of those awesome prosthetics where he can just crush rocks?
It's amazing. It's black rubber, and it actually looks like a hand. It even has little indentations where fingernails ought to be.
Fantastic.
Looks like a hand, but it's like this badass black rubber, and it's connected to like the upper part of his arm, so it's one of those ones that gets electrical signals.
Like nerve sensations.
Yeah, nerve sensations. So he actually, it bends and operates like an actual hand.
Yeah.
It's very cool. And so he is currently learning to tie his shoes, put on a watch, and shake hands. His mother says she expects her insurance company will pay for most of the $90,000 prosthetic.
Oh, they're unbelievable. So there's
but she's going to have to pay some of it, and she thinks their family's going to be stuck with about $25,000 of it.
This is not a spoiler, but later on, it's not till season 5, but in season 5, there's an episode of The Wire where a guy at one point pays a visit to the VA, and he's there, and he's talking to a guy who lost a hand in Afghanistan, and he's got... And I think they filmed it at Walter Reed, and it's I think that the guy is an actual vet that they sort of cast in the role, and he's just been given one of those cool like cyborgian hands, and so I was talking to Alara about it, and I said that thing is awesome. I wonder if that's real. And she's like, oh yeah. She's like, I see guys with those, you know, not all the time, but fairly regularly. Guys will come through, and they've got the whole like zoom, and they are like $60,000 each or something. But she said it's like the most awesome application of science she's ever seen in her life. Because it can do, like, you can, because they used to be with those prosthetics, it was like a one-size-fits-all grip. And so you go to pick up, you know, like your lunchbox for work, that's one thing. But you go to pick up, like, an egg, and it would just crush the thing. Or you go to shake somebody's hand. But this, apparently, you can, by flexing your arm or by, I don't know, like, just the power of your mind, you can do, like, a point, or you can do a grasp, or you can do a power hold, or you can do, like, a twist or a turn, or it's, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's a
salute,
yeah,
Ronnie James
say,
Dio.
Go look up the video on the 15-year-old with the prosthetic hand in Maryland, because yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Excellent.
A man accused of berating and threatening a greeter at Walmart who asked to see his receipt pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct and drug possession charges. James Maurice Barker, 45, of Bethlehem, Maryland, was sentenced to 6 months to 1 year in prison and fined $750. And he also has to receive drug and alcohol evaluations and attend anger management classes. In court, Barker tearfully apologized to the greeter from the Bethlehem Township, Pennsylvania store.
I'm a colossal boob.
I'm only a human being. I'm flawed. I made mistakes, Barker said as he cried. I just want to live my life.
For what is a man?
Barker, who claims he's working on an album with the Motown record label, says he was visiting from the West Coast back in October when he decided to take his two teenage sons shopping. The group drove to the Walmart in a limo, and Barker purchased about $1,000 worth of electronics. Barker said his sons were taking the purchases out of the shopping cart when the store greeter approached and asked to see their receipt. Defense attorney Robert Sletfold said, he's a musician. He's flamboyant. He's loud. He felt he and his sons were being disrespected. Zvitvold said Barker has an overprotective instinct since his son was shot and killed in Philadelphia a few years ago. That sets all kind of alarms in you, he said. The judge said to the guy, had you just left quietly, no one would have arrested you.
Yes. Yeah, that is true.
So, yeah, the greeter told police that Barker accused him of being a racist and told him to meet Barker outside, and used expletives 20 to 30 times during his tirade.
Here's the thing is, like, if you don't leave, right or wrong, if you don't leave, eventually the man just comes.
The guy also had cocaine and a glass pipe in the limo he was taking with his sons to Walmart.
Shocked. Yeah, I'm stunned by that. Yeah. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. That is the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Hick Watch, also Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. That is Humor Me, Comedy 101. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do some entertainment
news. Here's your entertainment news, and by which we mean news that's even more entertaining than that we just did. Here is Don Taylor.
Writer and playwright Arthur Marx, son of comedian Groucho Marx, died at his Los Angeles home from natural causes. The 89-year-old wrote the books Life with Groucho, Goldwyn, the man behind the myth, The Nine Lives of Mickey Rooney, and The Secret Life of Bob Hope. Marx was also a staff writer on the 1970s TV series Alice, and he co-wrote Bob Hope films Eight on the Lam, A Global Affair, Cancel My Reservation, and I'll Take Sweden.
You know, being the son of Groucho Marx has got to be... That really is the definition of good news, bad news. Because on the one hand, you probably don't have to work all that hard. You got a little money in the bank. You got your father's legacy. You can always... Look, if times get really hard, you can just milk it with a book called Me and Dad. And it's just... you can do the Michael Reagan of just finding every photograph of you and your father and just making sure that they are prominently positioned on the front and back of the book. And then stockpile a series of amusing and heartwarming anecdotes that you can tell when you go on like Regis and Kathy Lee. On the other hand, you realize that unless... Really, honestly, unless you cure... You know, like something horrible. You're never, ever, 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 ever going to be anything except that guy's son. I mean, that really is, that can't be overstated.
Yeah. Well, growing up in L.A., I saw that, like, a lot. I remember friends of mine, they had a band, and they shot a music video. And it was like, and this guy shot our music video. You know, he's Leonard Nimoy's son.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. I remember some guy going, this guy's awesome. You know, Gene Kelly's his dad. Yeah, and that's like the second thing out of anybody's mouth is if you have a famous parent.
This guy's awesome, accidentally.
Yeah.
Through nothing he did.
Although I did have a secondhand anecdote about a gay friend who slept with Tommy Lasorda's son and woke up in the morning to hear, like, Tommy Lasorda, longtime manager.
In the kitchen?
No, on the answering machine.
Oh.
Calling, going, hey, gay, you want to come down to the park? I got a couple of seats for you if you want to come down this afternoon. And he's like all laying naked and tangled in the sheets and going, this is the weirdest moment of my life.
Did he know that in advance?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't
His name's Tommy Lasorda Jr. Everybody knew who his dad was.
I didn't know if it was sort of like, that guy leaving the message on the machine sounds a lot like Tommy Lasorda. And then there's a lot of, you got to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Demi Lovato tweeted on Thursday about Catherine Zeta-Jones' decision to seek treatment for bipolar 2 disorder. I don't know Catherine Zeta-Jones personally, but what she has decided to do is so brave, said Lovato, who spent time in a treatment facility for a nervous breakdown. And so difficult, but worth it. I'm proud of her.
I regret that I've already made the Domo Irrigato Demi Lovato joke, because now I have no humor, I have no comments, there's nothing left in my wit category for her. Demi Moore.
Courtney Cox and David Arquette spoke Thursday morning with Howard Stern about their relationship problems. And, of course, being on Howard Stern, it naturally came around to whether or not they've had sex with each other since they've split up.
I'm sure this has nothing to do with the fact that they're both there to promote Scream 4.
Oh, yeah. No, that's why they were there. Yeah. But Cox talked about spurning Arquette's advances when they had spent time together at Disney World.
You said Cox and then you said spurning.
Yeah. She told Howard Stern... That was like the worst. I can't even tell you. I'd just woken up. He'd been up. You know, he doesn't sleep. The truth of the matter is we love each other so much. We have such affection for each other, but we're very different. And then when asked by Howard Stern if she has had sex since she split up with David Arquette, she responded, I have not had sex.
Okay.
All of that is just awkward and unpleasant, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, but you know, but the thing is, it's not like that's the first time that they've done that. I mean, Arquette was... When it was like when they first busted up like 4 or 5, 6 months ago, he was the one who went on Stern and just sort of laid it bare because I don't think anybody knew about it. I think that they had been sort of quietly separated And then Arquette just, I don't know, they got to happen to a bottle of schnapps or something. It was, I'll call Howard about it, which is always a great idea.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that is where you see exactly, that is the heavy hand of publicity and marketing at work. Because you know that there's probably no place that Courtney Cox wants to be less than sitting in a studio with Howard Stern and David Arquette having to talk about whether she's humping some guys now that she's single again.
Yeah.
So that is singularly unpleasant. Hey, just a second ago, when you talk about Demi Lovato, my brain did a thing. Were you talking about Catherine Zeta-Jones or were you talking about Demi Moore?
I was talking about Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Did Demi Moore at all come into that story, or was that a thing that my head just switched the
that
two of them?
That was all entirely in your
head.
You
know why? It's because, for some reason, I was thinking about that thing, the Ashton Kutcher Demi Moore thing. Have you seen them? They've been all over the news today about that.
No.
Don't buy your women in a crate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
don't buy a box of wife from Ecuador.
And some human rights
whatever.
Organizations are saying, I think these idiot celebrities are kind of oversimplifying what is an actual problem.
It's not even that they're oversimplifying it. It's just that the ads are stupid.
Yeah.
The ads
no, they have, are really idiotic.
You have to oversimplify things for the American
Boys
public.
Boys shouldn't sell girls.
But the thing is, they don't even say that, though. That's the thing.
Well, I think there is one that actually says that.
The ad, they say it at the end. They say, like, real men don't buy women.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
But... Oh, which is fine. I mean, I get that. I mean, you have to boil things down to a catchphrase, and it's a 30-second spot or what. I have no issue with the boiling it down. It's the tagline and the rest of the commercials have nothing to do with each other. So you get the first 29 seconds, which is like Leonardo DiCaprio shaving with a chainsaw or something. Literally, I think that's one of the ads. And then it just ends with the tagline of, like, real men don't buy women. And so clearly a guy just had a big file of just bizarre imagery or things that he had shot for, like, an Old Spice commercial. And they didn't have anything to do with it. They went, I don't know, we got this whole thing about, I don't know, about buying chicks from Vietnam. Maybe we should, I don't know, we'll do that. And then they just went, and they just stuck the tagline on at the end. So badly are they executed that as of today, there is already now a whole series of parodies that have flooded the internet. So well done, people of the web. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com.
Janelle Evans, star of MTV's Teen Mom 2, pleaded guilty to possession of drug paraphernalia on Thursday. Under her deal, the 19-year-old will have her record cleared if she performs 24 hours of community service. Evans was arrested in October with her boyfriend when they allegedly broke into an abandoned home in Oak Island, North Carolina, to smoke marijuana. The reality star was ordered to appear in court on April 14th. I only have one really major regret, Whoopi Goldberg told Piers Morgan, and it was that I had the opportunity to spend a birthday with Sammy Davis Jr., and I didn't. The actress and co-host of The View was a guest on Wednesday's Piers Morgan Tonight. Morgan brought up relationships and Goldberg's three marriages, none of which lasted more than 6 years, and she explained why.
I suppose that, you know, you have to actually be in love with the person that you marry. You have to really be committed to them, and I don't have that commitment. I'm
she
committed
supposes.
To my family. You know, and so that relationship has lasted, you know, the longest.
Do you think you were in love with all your husbands?
No.
Well, it's... I think we may have just... Here's your problem right here, Whoopi. We've discovered the source of the...
Morgan and Goldberg then talked about her one true love, who you will be shocked to learn was not Ted Danson.
Morgan and Goldberg sounds like every radio show that I've decided in advance I will never listen to in the morning.
It seemed to me that if I was married, I'd have a much more normal life. But clearly that's not the case. That's not a good reason to get married. You have to actually want a life with someone. Through ups and downs, and I just discovered that wasn't for me.
Just imagine waking up every morning and just hearing that voice in the bed next to you and then realizing it's actually there, that you're not hallucinating.
Goldberg told Morgan she has no interest in getting
Let's
married again.
Let's take a shower.
And explained why she married three times.
It seemed to me that if I was married, I'd have a much more normal life. But clearly that's not the case. That's not a good reason to get married. You have to actually... want a life with someone.
Oh, this is the longer version of the...
Through ups and downs. And I just discovered that wasn't for me.
I'd like you to buy me some delicate under things. Jesus God almighty. All right.
So she hadn't actually, like, heard about this whole commitment.
The love.
Love.
Thing.
The whole
no,
love
it's,
commitment part
no,
of it.
No, she's learning by doing. She's a kinesthetic studier, that Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
Is
that's,
that the end?
Yeah, that's all the end.
All right, there you go. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here. That is, yeah. Or at legionofnews.com. By the way, a couple of things, a little bit of business here. A, don't forget the Rick Emerson Show happens next hour at rickemersonshow.com. The Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy can be yours for the low cost of just 32 cents a day at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got your Hick Watch coming up. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Also, we want to give shout-outs, or perhaps shout-out. I never know which it is. Is it like Surgeons General? Where he shouts out?
I don't. I think because it's...
It's one, it's
I think
one
because
shout.
It's hyphenated, it would be shout-outs.
Shout-outs. All right.
Yeah.
We want to give ups, as the youth used to say once upon a time, to our friends Robert Wagner et al. At Cascadia.fm, where we are proud to be a part of Cascadia.fm. For apparently, they got a big fat mention on CNN's tech news this morning. So, well done, Cascadia.fm, and everybody there. So, yeah, there was a there's a sort of a like a I think it's the televised version of their online tech blog. So they did a huge thing about online broadcasting today, and so they give a big mention to Cascadia.fm. So, congratulations, everybody here at Cascadia.fm. We are honored to stand shoulder to shoulder with ye. Here is Don Taylor.
Superintendent of Jersey City Schools, Dr. Charles Epps, is in a lot of trouble.
I'm sorry? Darth Charles?
Doctor.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Charles
All
Epps.
Right.
Darth Charles. He's now in a lot of trouble with parents and students for comments he made about young ladies on Wednesday. During a meeting.
I like the curve of your calf.
During a meeting with other ministers on the budget for policing schools, Epps reportedly said, "Our worst enemy is the young ladies. The young ladies are bad. I don't know what they're drinking today, but they're bad."
Well, that is true. That's just a fact.
In an emergency press conference called Thursday afternoon in his office, he tried to correct the situation by saying, "That was taken out of context, and I love young ladies."
Yeah, I was drunk. Sorry.
He loves young ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know
who doesn't.
Much better. Later, while talking about volunteer mentors from J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, Epps also reportedly had said that these volunteer mentors, they've signed up to help even the dirty, nasty, bad kids.
Can we make him the spokesperson for the Emerson News Network? Can we just make him? Because we never were able to find the what's-his-name, Baghdad Bob, the
right.
There are no American troops in Iraq, as they're, like, dismantling his podium. We should totally get this guy to issue all of our public statements.
He's totally got this Marion Barry thing going on too. As I saw him on the news, and he looks like a very charming, nice, friendly sort of, you know, rounded. You know, he's like you called Central Casting and you said, we want the kind-hearted black inner city principal with the big mustache. Who's like, except that he apparently
speaks,
says these dumb things, and then he has these friends. He goes. He asked, "Well, do you apologize for that?" He said, "Absolutely, I apologize. They're not bad. They're confused.
The problem is bitches."
Yeah.
All right.
So, yes, the mentors have signed up to help even the dirty, nasty,
yes.
bad kids.
Who was it? Was it Marion Barry that was on the? He was the videotape smoking crack in his hotel room or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like, and as soon as the cops came in, all he just kept saying, he like latched. The great thing about that Marion Barry tape is that, he's there on the grainy sort of, you know, and this is like back, you know, like back in the 80s. So you had to make do, like your surveillance cameras, they didn't really have the quality and fidelity that you have now. It was like it's the ultra high quality living color, but it was just like this grainy, scratchy black and white footage. And so there's Marion Barry just smoking. First of all, the idea that he was ever elected mayor again after smoking a huge bag of crack on television is awesome. I mean, that's what makes this a country in which I am proud to live.
It makes you realize that like whoever replaced him later just was so awful.
Seriously,
they're like, let's bring back the crack smoking mayor.
But so he's like lighting up the thing crack or whatever, and then the cops just like pour in. I mean, it just like. Rainwater from every direction, and they started cuffing him, and he just latches onto this one phrase. If you watch this event, he goes, "Bitches set me up," over and over and over again, like 17 times in a row, as they're hauling him out. "Bitches set me up."
And yeah, that's my excuse for everything,
glorious.
By the way.
Seriously.
Everything that goes wrong in my life, that's my go-to excuse. "Bitches set me up."
Here's the thing. we got to wrap this up here, but you know what we should do? Just in honor of this guy, and because you know his dance card, I imagine, is going to be relatively full over the next you know the next few fiscal quarters. We should just fabricate our own public spokesperson. You know, our own PR person, our own sort of mouthpiece, and then just put out all their statements through that guy who does not, in point of fact, exist.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just craft the things that we would ideally like to say without any gloss or finish or any sort of, you know.
Maybe we'll get David Walker to do it for us.
There you go. So, all right. And with that, we bring the curtain down on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, this program is available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Don Taylor is at the news desk today. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kennecoa. My name is Rick Emerson. We thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying weekday weekend. We will see you Monday at noon for another installment of Legion of News.